Experience the power of 5G with T-Mobile. With faster 5G speeds nationwide, you can upload your favorite videos super fast or game on the go. Plus, T-Mobile has more 5G bars in more places, so you can stay connected to what matters most from almost anywhere. Switch to T-Mobile today, the leader in 5G.
T-Mobile has America's largest 5G network, fastest based on median overall combined 5G speeds, according to analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence data 5G speeds for Q4 2021. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
You know the old saying, selling like hotcakes? What does that even mean? What is a hotcake anyway? They should change it to selling like Hondas, because right now, Hondas are selling faster than ever. Probably because they're so rugged, long-lasting, and fuel-efficient. And if you want one, you should get to your local Honda dealer right away. Check out the 8-passenger Pilot, or maybe the adventurous Passport. But you gotta do it fast, because Hondas are selling like, well, Hondas. New models are arriving right now. Don't wait. See your local Honda dealer today.
You're listening to the Bow Hunter Planet podcast, your gateway to the wonderful world of archery and bow hunting. Now, your hosts, Tim and Dave. Enjoy the show.
Everyone, welcome to the Bowhunter Planet podcast tonight. Really excited tonight myself, Dave Thomas. Sorry, I'm even messing my own name up. We're going to redo that. I'm that's reading awesome. The name. I don't know why. Wow.
That's awesome. Wow.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Bowhunter Planet podcast. Really excited for tonight. Myself, Tim Mazzarana, Dave Thomas, as always, and special guest tonight, which we're really excited to talk to, is Greg Glessinger. Greg, it is great to have you on. I know you're a big part of the DoD family over there. You're involved with a lot of stuff. We wanted to have you on and just kind of talk about you, your background, what you do over there, and kind of see how things are going, what you have going on this year, next year, and that whole bit. So, Greg, if you wouldn't mind, give us a little bit of background about Drury Outdoors, DoD, and kind of what's going on there recently, and a little bit of history, if you don't mind.
Sure. DoD started, 32 or 33 years ago. They're based out of St. Louis, St. Peter's, Missouri. And I've been lucky enough to be with them. Officially, this will be my 11th year. Unofficially, it's got to be 13, wow. Maybe 13 or 14. I think 13. DoD was started by Mark and Terry Drury, and now they have Terry's son, Matt, who's very much involved, runs the office, the production. He's kind of, I would say, the quarterback behind the scenes that's probably the unsung hero that probably doesn't get the PR that he probably deserves. He's definitely earned it, but he probably doesn't get it. And then Taylor has really stepped up in the organization here in the last 3 or 4 years. And she is driving our social media from A to Z. She runs her own team. And what you see behind the scenes, if it's social media related, her fingertips or her face is definitely involved in it somehow, some way. So it's really neat to see the second generation of the juries getting involved in the last, for Taylor, really involved in the last 4 or 5. But Matt, he's been really diving in for, I think he's with 15 or 16 years now, hardcore, but really taking it next level here in the last 5 or 7 years. Far as DoD stuff, if you're in the whitetail space and you don't know what DeerCast is, you're probably living under a rock, would be my guess. But they have really taken the app world and the hunting space to a whole nother level with DeerCast, and it's truly blowing the expectations away, and it's growing super fast. And the expectations and the feedback we're getting from the average hunter is exactly what their goals have been met. I mean, they're hitting it out of the park, and the stuff they're doing behind the scenes that I can't say much about, but I do know some, it's really, really going to be mind blowing when the next version comes out. It is hard to put in words. I was blessed enough to be in a meeting. We have an NDA, so can't say too much. I can't say much, but I was in awe. I mean, I'm not a guy that doesn't say much. I'm pretty talkative, but in that meeting, I was blown away by where they want to take this and how they're going to do it. And really, the sky's the limit is what I will tell you. And there's a lot of time and effort and energy to constantly come up with new ideas that meets and exceeds the hunter's expectations. And from what I've seen, it's going to blow it away. So from a DOD standpoint, that's really what they're focusing on, obviously, is DeerCast. It's where it's going. It's the platform moving forward. There's no doubt that's where they want this organization to go to.
Yeah, so we probably got to end the podcast because I just pulled it up and it says that I got to get out there right now. It's time to hit the woods. No, I'm just joking. But that's awesome. DeerCast, and you're not wrong about that. When you talk about DeerCast and you just mention that name, if you don't know what that is, you probably are living under a rock. Because it's become synonymous in the industry now. I mean, there's not a lot of apps out there, right, that are just hunting related, period. But an app like that, I mean, it takes it to the next level. And I'm excited to hear what you just said, which is there's even more coming with that app and everything that's going on with it. So
what's crazy is, I mean, for $20, which is the elite version, for $19.99, for $20, you get the entire DOD library of over 32 years that you can thumb through.
Wow.
Which back in the day, I was one of the biggest customers early on. Was a DVD? I think there were $9.99. I think, is that right? I think.
Yeah. No, that sounds about right. I'm trying to factor down inflation.
I think. So now you have access to all of it, just that alone for $20, and then and then you throw in all the DeerCast track, which is my favorite part, and what that is it breaks down the anatomy of the whitetail and it shows you where you hit the animal, and then you can go to videos that will tell you how long you should wait and give you some insight of how you should obviously address your unfortunate hit. It's like having Mark and Terry in your back pocket. I mean, for $20, who doesn't want that, right? And then we get into all the articles. I think they're at like 700 or 750 articles that are in there that all related to the outdoor space, whether it's hunting or outdoor lifestyle. And then all of our journal entries we have to get them in. Our goal is to turn them around within 72 hours, and they're up within 3 or 4 days of us tipping over whatever animal we're chasing. And so we're trying to get really real time. And in my opinion, I think we're achieving it at next level stuff. So if you want to follow anybody within the DOD team, you can just go to DeerCast, the app, and it's all right there. I mean, it's they got 3 or 4 new updates they do per day. There's always something happening every single day. It's crazy the amount of staff behind the scenes to keep this engine rolling. It's quite impressive.
Yeah, and I think it's really important because, you know, we've been talking for the last 11 years that we've been around, new hunters, next generation, right? And what better way to capture that next generation than to use their technology, right? Everybody's on their phone now. Everybody's on apps. That's how you run your life. I'm on a laptop right now, but swear to God, other than like editing videos and that kind of stuff, the only time I'm on my laptop is doing this stuff. Everything else, like personal wise, I do from my phone. So I think it's super important for to see companies like DOD and Drury Outdoors and all that really engage the next generation of hunter and come to them on their level and what they want to see, because we need that. You know, we really need those new hunters coming into the industry, not only from, you know, an industry standpoint, but most definitely from a conservation standpoint as well.
100%. Yeah, you bet. Absolutely.
So that's awesome, man. So you're involved with a lot over there though. And I think one of the main things you do is with Bow Madness. What's going on with Bow Madness? How's the last couple of years been? Has COVID kind of changed what you guys do and how you do it? But, you know, what's kind of going on with Bow Madness?
Well, unfortunately, we always have a DOD meeting in every August, the last second or third week of August. And, this past year we had it, but year before COVID obviously shut that down. So that was a little bit, you did a lot of Zoom calls and that whole situation. But from a hunting standpoint, you know, COVID really didn't shut us down too bad unless you're traveling outside the U.S. because it's really a solitude sport. Let's be honest with you, you know. So that was a beautiful thing from that, from a standpoint of production and people missing trips. There's a few of us that couldn't go out on international trips or outside the US, but other than that, COVID really didn't affect us much. There's probably, I got to go down the, I think there's 10 of us on the Bo Madness cast. I might be off, but I think it's 10. And we got guys that are, some of us are very concentrated in Midwest. And then we got like John O'Dell. He goes all over. I go all over. Most guys are really focused on the whitetail space. And that's really what's the bread and butter of DOD. But like myself and John, Rick, he may travel out. Dave Kramer, he likes the Western stuff as well. Myself, I love going West every single year. I try to do mule deer and elk. This coming next year, I'll be going to Alaska.
Awesome.
In September for about 2.5 weeks to chase moose with a bow and hopefully brown bear. Moose is going to be number one. If we have time, then we're going to move over into brown bear. So that will be my fourth trip to Alaska, fourth time with a bow, and I'm 0-3. So I'm
it's got to happen, man. Got to happen.
I hope that, you know, 1-4 is in my future. So we'll see. But it is, if anybody ever's thinking about going to Alaska, and I understand it's extremely expensive. I understand that. But let me tell you, it is a trip. And I mean a trip of a lifetime. Even if you come home empty, the to and from and experiencing that outdoors in Alaska is next level, unbelievable, can't put it in words type of experience.
Now, those trips that you've taken in the past, have you had any close calls?
Yeah, I've close calls. So I've been 3 years ago was my last trip. I went on a full draw on a brown bear that was probably inside of 11 yards, maybe 10. And the guy had his gun next to me, obviously for danger reasons. And he stepped on a twig. Oh. And I was literally a half a second from releasing the arrow. And that bear whipped around and it was over. But it took us about a half a day to go from 750 yards to within 11 or 10. But yeah, I don't know. He looked at me, I looked at him. I was mortified. And I'll put no that doubt. Mild.
No doubt.
But
so, when you said it took you how many days to go from 750 down to 11?
Oh, it took us about a half a day because we're trying to use goalies and the wind and okay. You know, it's when you find these animals out there, it's depending on the terrain, and Alaska is so vast and so variant on the terrain that so just say you're going to the Yukon. What part of the Yukon? Because it's so different. And where we were, we had a lot of rolling knobs is what I would call them, and a lot of brush. And so we would just glass, watch a move, make adjustments, you know, trying to play the wind. And when we got to 100, he looked at me, he goes, "You sure you want to do this?" He's been guiding for, I don't know, it was well over a decade or 15 years. And he's never had a guy take one with a bow. So he was just as nervous as I was.
Sure.
See it in his eyes for all the right reasons. But when we got within that 20 yard mark, I'm like, this is actually going to happen. And it was going to happen. We were half a second away. And
that's at least you walked away with the story, right?
Yeah. we did talk about that later in the tent that night. We said, you know, we're definitely disappointed, but nobody got hurt. And, you know, that was his, because he said, he goes, "Greg, as soon as you release the arrow, I know you want to kill him with a bow. But if he even looks our direction, the clip's going to get empty."
Yeah.
And I said, you know, I completely understand that. So the good thing is nobody got hurt. But it's an adrenaline rush that's really money can't buy. It's Casey, who was over my right shoulder filming it, when he ran away, we looked at each other and our pants were full. Let's put it that way.
No doubt. Now, do you hunt when you're doing whitetail, do you hunt in areas where there's bear?
No, we don't. We chase whitetail. You know, we've done Kansas, we've done Oklahoma, Illinois, Wisconsin, Iowa, Missouri. That's pretty much where we go.
Yeah, obviously not all bears are made the same, and brown bears you definitely don't want to mess with. I know up here in Michigan, where we're at, the upper part of the lower peninsula and then the upper peninsula, pretty decent bear population, and they're black bears though. So it's, you know, obviously completely different type of bear, different demeanor, major temper, difference, all that kind of stuff, but you still kind of, you know, look behind your back. And, you know, I do a lot of ground blind hunting where I go, and you're sitting on the ground, and you never know when one might pop up, and it's pretty interesting when they do. So
here's an interesting fact. I was in New Mexico elk hunting. This has probably been a decade ago. And the DNR game and fish guy agent came into our camp to, you know, do the random checks and so forth. And I was asking about bears. And I said, you know, I've seen a few blacks. And he looked at me and goes, do not take them lightly. And I said, well, I wasn't planning on it. And he said, no, I'm serious when I say that. And I said, what's your point? And he said, we have more black bear attacks. And the data will show there's more black bear attacks than brown bears and grizzlies. And I said, is that just a pure number thing? He said, well, yeah, sure, it is. But he said, they're more aggressive than you realize. So treat them like a grizzly or brown bear and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
And that is one statement that I've never took lightly. I mean, he was serious as a heart attack.
Yeah, so it hit home for me this year because I was hunting a new spot on the land up north, and we had trail cams out. We saw, at first it looked like, and we don't really have wild hogs in Michigan at all, but on camera, this thing looked like a pig. Like, it was ridiculous, the size of this thing. And, you know, we're sitting there and we're watching it and on film, and it comes and goes. And there was a little bit of a pattern to it. As we got closer to hunting season, it kind of changed and we stopped seeing it. For quite a long time. And we go up to our hunt camp, and one of the caretakers of the property, we were sitting with them one night. He's like, I got to show you something. Like, you guys wouldn't believe this. And he pulls out this picture of this. I think it was a 14-year-old. It was a teenage girl that ended up during our bear season shooting this thing. And it came out to, I want to say, 525 pounds. And if it's not the Michigan record, it was really close to being a Michigan record for a black bear. And he's showing us picture of this thing. And he's like, you won't believe where she shot it. And he pulls out the map of the area. She shot it literally a mile and a half south of where our trail cams were picking it up. So that bear that was maybe a Michigan record, I think they're still waiting to see whether it was or not. You know, might have been sitting next to me when I was hunting deer this year. So yeah, you can't take, because you never know when they're going to show up, right? I mean, it's just that type of animal. They're so quiet.
Oh, next level quiet.
Yeah,
crazy quiet. Yeah. What, out of curiosity, did you know the age of that bear?
It happened not that long before we were hunting. So I think that they were guessing that it was 5.5 to 6. But they weren't entirely sure.
I would have guessed older.
Yeah, and it might be. Who we were talking to, I don't know how much experience he has, you know, and you know how the rumors spread around, you know, around the smaller towns and stuff like that. So it could have been much older.
Huh.
For sure. But the fact that we saw it on camera, I mean, a week before she shot it, I mean, those things, that's a pretty big bear for sure.
Oh, that's not big. That's
huge. Huge. That's huge. Yeah, for sure.
They always say black bears are more aggressive though, and they will attack to kill. Whereas like a grizzly bear might just want, think you're dead or you play dead. They said with the black bear, you need to fight for your life as well.
So. Yeah. I've heard that and read that as well.
Yeah. So, you know, we always go out with, I don't always, but I either have bear mace or I take a firearm with me, you know, because you just don't want to be stuck in those situations, you know, trying to hunt whitetail and then get ambushed. So,
yeah.
But bear hunting story. Awesome. Those are always fun. Dave's got some good ones too. I know. He actually cried one time up in a tree when a bear came in. I think that's how the story went. Is that,
let's talk about bucks. All right. Greg's got a lot of bucks here. Let's move on to the good stuff. People want to know about white tails.
I like how Tim is parking the bus on Dave, and Dave's not saying much. That's not fair.
I want to hear about these jewelry bucks, man. They killed the biggest bucks in the world. Let's hear it.
Oh, I love it, man. So Bow Madness, did you guys just finish up your season then?
No, we're still going. I'm going to be leaving Sunday or Monday to head back to Iowa and Missouri. We've Unfortunately, this is the first year this has ever happened to me, and I've been doing this, well, bow hunting for almost 25, 26, 27 years, whatever it is now. But we had a late harvest. We had a very, very wet fall, and our farmers couldn't get in. So our fields did not get harvested until, I think it was like the 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th of December.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was horrible. It was after Thanksgiving. And so our farms were hunting. They've got a lot of ag in them. And so once that ag's harvested, it shrinks down the corridors or bedding and all that. But once all that corn was still up, it was really, really tough to hunt them, tough to find them. And so then everything changed once all that stuff got harvested. And so now, honestly, in the last, call it week to 10 days, is when our target bucks really started getting exposed. And we chase score, but we chase age first. And a lot of those mature ones were bedding out in the cornfields. And they weren't, now we shrunk them, and now we're finding them in the last week to 10 days. So hopefully between now and Christmas, our luck's going to hopefully change. Hopefully.
Yeah, that's cool. So what's your biggest buck to date?
My biggest buck is a 239.
Oh, my God. That's a big buck. I was thinking you're going to say like 185. That's a monster. Holy cow. Yeah, what state was that in?
That was Iowa. It was shot with a bow. It's actually the largest whitetail ever filmed in outdoor television history.
Wow.
Really? Professional.
Yeah. Yep.
Dang.
You don't bring that up often with the guys, do you?
You know what, Mark did a great job of it. I didn't realize all this the night that it happened, which was 2019. I told him, he texted me that night. He said, hey, a bunch of us are getting together for going out to dinner, would you like to join us? And I said, that would be my plan B. He said, what's your plan A? And I said, my plan A is tipping over extra innings. That was his name. And we've been patiently waiting. It was the October 30th or 29th of October. And I've been waiting for that wind, that pressure all year. Have not gone in once. So this is our first time in, and he's been daylighting a lot. So my expectations were pretty high to see him. I didn't know I was going to obviously.
Experience the power of 5G with T-Mobile. With faster 5G speeds nationwide, you can upload your favorite videos super fast or game on the go. Plus, T-Mobile has more 5G bars in more places, so you can stay connected to what matters most from almost anywhere. Switch to T-Mobile today, the leader in 5G.
T-Mobile has America's largest 5G network, fastest based on median overall combined 5G speeds, according to analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence data 5G speeds for Q4 2021. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
You know the old saying, selling like hotcakes? What does that even mean? What is a hotcake anyway? They should change it to selling like Hondas, because right now, Hondas are selling faster than ever. Probably because they're so rugged, long-lasting, and fuel-efficient. And if you want one, you should get to your local Honda dealer right away. Check out the 8-passenger Pilot, or maybe the Adventurous Passport. But you gotta do it fast, because Hondas are selling like, well, Hondas. New models are arriving right now. Don't wait. See your local Honda dealer today.
Harvest them, but we're definitely excited about getting in there. And I texted him that night, and he said, when are you coming to Mexican? And I said, I'm dealing with plan A. And all I got was, hell yes. so we threw him in the truck, and we met in the Mexican parking lot, and we scored him there. And he looked at me and goes, I don't think you realize what you've done. I said, no, I don't. What do you mean? He said, you just killed the largest whitetail gunner bow in DOD history. But he goes, I'm 99% certain you just killed the biggest whitetail ever filmed in professional outdoor sportsman's channel history. He goes,
wow.
I don't know. Yeah. So it was a fun and long evening, let me tell you that.
Yeah. And a long morning the next day.
And a long morning, yeah. But
I found the video on YouTube. This thing is a beast. Oh my God.
Yeah. The crazy thing was the year before we found his sheds, which we have, and you know, I'm gonna estimate he was in the mid 80s.
Really?
Yeah. So he jumped, you know, call it 60 inches in 1 year.
Do you know how old?
What's really interesting about that story is when we harvested him, his front front right or front left hoof actually had a very strong curl to it. And when I asked the biologist about it, he truly believes it took him out of the rut the year before. And so he went into the winter much heavier and fatter.
And
he said that's why he believes the jump of inches in his head, because he came into the spring not having to pack weight on his body and put that energy into his rack. Now, that's his theory. Do I have proof of that? No. But when he told me that, I'm like, okay, that makes logical sense.
Yeah, I'm going to buy that one too. That does make logical sense. Yeah.
And so it was really interesting because to have a whitetail grow, you know, almost 60 inches, 55 inches is unrealistic, and the expectations should never be that. And that's why I was trying to figure out why. And that's a theory that he hung on.
Did you get him aged?
He's 6.5.
Wow. That's great.
I'll tell you right now. That's one of the best bow shots I've seen in a long time. And that buck, I mean, how much time is he to give you? He just stands right there. A minute. He gives you a perfect shot. This is the fun. It's crazy.
The great part was we saw him at I think it was 245 or 315. If you were watching the YouTube clip, you go to the very beginning, you'll see it. We get a 4 or 5 second clip of him, and he's chasing a doe. Well, that doe drug him into a TSI part of the farm that we had just done that spring. And wow. I'm like, she's going to drag him in there, and come dark, this is the nearest food plot. I'm willing to bet you she's going to pull him out here. It all makes sense. And so every doe, I'm on my edge of my seat waiting to see if he's coming behind her. And finally, she came out and she kept looking behind him or behind her. And I'm like, okay, it's gotta be him. And then he came through the warm season grasses and parted that. And it's the most dominant experience I've ever seen of a whitetail, meaning he hit the plot and every single whitetail on that plot backed up. And he didn't go after him. He didn't push him. His mere presence on the plot was like, the man just showed up. Let's give him his space.
Yeah.
It was awkward. I've never seen that before. And then he went to a scrape that was, I believe, at 48 yards. And he was there for about, I'm going to call it 45 seconds. It's in the clip. And I was debating whether to shoot him because he was quartering away, 48. I had confidence in my abilities to let it go. And just as I clipped my D loop, the doe that he was chasing leaves and walks through our design bottleneck of our food plot. Which is 31 yards. And I was like, okay, he's going to realize once he's done scraping that she's gone. He's going to follow her through this bottleneck. And so I was like, I'm going to take the risk. I'm going to gamble. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm right. But I'd rather, with that quality of animal, I'm like, I'm going to take the risk. And sure enough, he realized she was gone and he went right through that bottleneck, and call it luck, because that's all it is luck. When she went through that bottleneck, she got to the other side of that bottleneck, which is another food plot. She stops and freezes. So she's probably 42, 45 away from me, but she's on the edge of the bottleneck. So she's already gone through. The minute he turns that corner and sees the bottleneck, he sees her and he stops. Just put the brakes on, and he happens to be 31 away, quartering away, and the rest is DOD.
If she would have been 10 yards away and he didn't see her, he probably would have went running, huh?
He would probably went over right through that bottleneck, and I would try to stop him, and it probably wouldn't have happened because he was so.
Tim, I'm changing hunt camps. I don't hunt you no more. I'm going to hunt with Greg from now on.
I don't blame you, man.
I'll shoot a 120. You guys
go right ahead.
They come out. This is like so exciting. Wow. I mean, that is unbelievable deer. I mean, all right. You know, here's the real challenge, Greg. I challenge you and all the juries to come do this in Michigan. Let's see how good you guys do then.
You know what, Dave? It's a fair question because I really cut my teeth in Wisconsin. Okay.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of public early on. And it's tough. I'm not gonna run from this question. It is tough. And when you hunt very large timber blocks like Michigan is, it's really, really tough. I hunted up in Michigan or Minnesota for a while, which is a large timber blocks not far from Leech Lake, Walker, Akeley, Minnesota, which is kind of 3 hours north of Minneapolis. That's tough too.
It's one of those things where it's like, I know you know your stuff. Like, I know it. I can tell just by listening to you talk and all that. I would just love, I don't know how to do this, Tim, but I would just love for Greg to see what we're working with and like tell us what he thinks, because I feel like maybe we're just doing things wrong. But then again, maybe he's gonna be like, you guys, that's a lost cause. You should be out of there. You know what I mean? Like,
well, but what I will say this, and you know, I give Mark a lot of credit, because I was lucky enough 12, 13, 14 years ago to sit in his living room. Well, I'll tell you the story, and this is fact. A couple times a week, he would invite a handful of us, 5, 6, 7, 8 of us, whatever it may be. And we would go pick up Kentucky Fried Chicken, whatever. And we'd hang out after the hunts during the late October through the first couple of weeks of November. And we would just talk deer hunting and strategies and all that. And I did that for, you know, 2, 3, 4 years. And one night we were packing up and cleaning up the kitchen. He goes, man, he goes, Greg, you don't talk much. And I said, Mark, I said, with the expertise and knowledge in this room, I really just want to sit and soak it in. Cause we had Terry there. Yeah. We had Mark, we had all their camera guys through the years. And there is nothing better than experience, right? Some of my experiences and my theories have come from my experiences. So my theories and what I will tell you not to do or do are based on my experiences. Now, a guy next to me will go, that's crazy. I wouldn't do that. Well, he might be right based on his experiences. It's like, right. You know, a lot of things we do in life, we make our knowledge based on what we experience. So those guys taught me so much. They probably forgot more than they taught me. I'm sure of it. And I just soaked it all in. And without being in those rooms, I'm not so sure I'd be in this position. I'm fairly certain I wouldn't be, and having the track record that we have. But I will say this, to answer your question, is if someone said, would I rather have a farm that's 50-50 timber and grass? Yes. Would I want to have 100% timber? No. But what I can tell you is if you do have 100% timber, you can cut it, you can design it, you can create funnels, you can create blocks as you cut those trees down. Now, obviously, you got to own the property to do that. I understand that.
Right.
But we do a lot of timber stand improvement, a lot of edge feathering along the fields, and we create, you know, bottlenecks. We create travel corridors. We create deer movement based on how we want them to go, based on our entry and exit to that plot or that location that we want to get to.
Yeah, that's
amazing. We may even put a wall of timber that we did timber stand improvement and take the tractor bobcat and move it over and drop them so that when we get out of the stand, they may hear us, but they're not going to see us and they're not going to smell us. I've always said is you want to hunt deer, but they don't need to know they're being hunted.
Yeah.
You want to exit and leave so that the less pressure they are, then the more movement they will have during daylight. And the more movement they have during daylight, the more opportunity you have to obviously harvest them.
Yeah.
So we as hunters are more often our worst enemy. You want to exit and leave with no trace as much as you can. I mean, our exit and entry on 99% of our spots are bulletproof. And I mean bulletproof. And yeah, there are times we'll dive into, well, in 2017, we shot Major League, well, in 203, which was my first 200 inch deer. We went 5 days in a row into a Oak Ridge. And we went in there 45 minutes to an hour before dark and 45 minutes after dark. We didn't leave. Because I want to minimize scent and pressure, because I knew I finally found him and we saw him and I'm like, this is our only way to kill him. And I told Mark, I said, two things are going to happen. We're going to kill him or we're going to push him out, but I got to try. And when after 5 days of going in, we finally got him. But we really do, you know, from nose jamming our boots to scent crushing our clothes to all those things, you know, we take that stuff all the way to the 10th degree to try to minimize as much as we can. Yeah. There's no such thing as a silver bullet. We try to do a lot of little things that hopefully add up to great things.
So for the brand new hunter, the ones that are watching this podcast that are getting interest into hunting that have never done it before, Would that be your number one tip, or do you have a different number one tip for the brand new hunter? Let's just say the top two things that they should be thinking about when going out.
I guess
what I took you for is staying invisible, right? Which includes scent and all of that kind of stuff. So would you call that number one?
Yeah, for sure. You know, and what I would do, you know, how I cut my teeth early on was, and I learned this the hard way, was just take your expectations away. Don't try to chase a 130 or 140, 150. Don't do it, right? What I would tell you to do is start shooting does. And let me tell you, to harvest a late season mature doe in December and January is very, very difficult from a tree stand because she is so wary and she knows everything. It's a tough thing to do. And if you can make those mistakes, which the best lesson for a bow hunter is mistakes. I can tell you about them. I can talk about them all you want. But let me tell you, when you do them, they burn a little deeper and they sting a little harder. I would just focus on practice, harvesting does, getting your shot, getting your confidence up, all those things. And obviously exit and entry and going undetected the best that you can. And always use that wind to your favor. If the wind is wrong, we don't go. We'll go somewhere else.
Now, when you say, so that's a big point to everybody. And everybody says wind, wind, wind. What does that mean? So when you talk about wind, what are you talking about wind? Are you talking upwind, downwind? Just so that people get an idea.
I want the wind in my face based on where they're coming from. So if they're coming from the north, I want a north wind because I'm going to hunt the south side of that flock. Higher pressure days are better. You got to, you know, here's a great trip, a tip for a new bow hunter. If you can, and I don't care if it's public or you go to an outfitter, I don't really care. I wish I would have done spot and stalk hunting earlier in my career than I do now. And why is because it forces you to understand the wind at a whole nother level. And it forces you to understand thermals at a whole nother level. And you start paying attention to deer movement and personalities different than when you're hunting whitetail up in a tree at 20 feet. It's different. But when you come back, you're like, you learn so much and it shortens that curve up so quickly that I wish I would have done that sooner.
I love that. That's a great tip.
It really is. So Greg, real quick, and more of the business side of the how it works. And, you know, a lot of people ask the question like, well, you know, what is it like changing equipment? And I know you guys went from PSC to Matthews, and it was that hard for the team? Cause I mean, it's a lot of guys to switch over to a totally new brand. You know, I know you guys have been with PSC a long time. So yeah. I had this feeling like, man, it must've been hard on to make the switch, even though we all know Matthews makes amazing bows. I'm just saying like, when you're a serious hunter and you're hunting, like as hard as you guys were hunting, I can see a switch being a little bit like, oh man, really? So I guess how did that go for the team and all that?
Well, I mean, realistically, you're absolutely right. It's not easy. And the only thing, you know, when they called and gave us the call, I said, you know what, no matter what hobby we're in or what you're looking for, there is a business side to everything. And that's what pays the bills. And that's just the God's honest truth. No different than what you guys do. I mean, you guys have a long list of sponsors. I've listened to several of your guys' podcasts and your bow reviews and so forth. I get it. And so when the change came, the only thing I asked Mark, I said, how soon can I get this?
Yeah, because exactly. You want to get to work.
I got to get to work and I got to start throwing stuff downrange because it's going to be different. And I don't want to be that guy. And, you know, that doesn't put the time in. And if you put the time in, it's the adjustment's fine. But for the guys who didn't, we had some misses. And I don't, it wasn't because PSC is better than Matthews or Matthews is better than PSC. It had nothing to do with it. It's just that they didn't put the time in because it was different. And every manufacturer's got their, you know, pros and cons. But once you start getting them feeled out and figure out what's going on, it's, you know, the bows today are amazing. I mean, compared to 15 and 20 years ago. I mean, honestly, they're amazing. So I knew with Matthews, it was going to be an outstanding bow. I wasn't worried about that. I was worried about me adjusting to the bow. I'm like, the sooner we get them, the better off we're going to be. And so that was kind of the number one game plan going into it. And they, Matthews was great. They worked with us and they got him out as fast as they could. So it couldn't have gone any smoother. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Cause I always know, cause I mean, I shoot a lot of different boats here for our test live show. And I always know they always have a different feel. And, you know, we had a hunter, Ron Reslow, who's, you know, if he was out there with you guys, he'd be one of your top hunters as well. He is like, this guy's unbelievable hunter. And he, well, anyway, when we started Boner Planet, I would give him all different bows all the time. Be like, hey, you know, use this one this year, or use that one. And he'd be so mad. He'd be like, stop it. I don't care what it is. I don't care the brand. You know what I mean? Cause he was so serious about every shot. And that's why I brought it up. Cause I know you guys have major, major hunters on this team. So I can see some people not being happy with even any sort of change. I know there's hunters who don't even like changing within the brand they use. And there's so many guys.
It's true. It's
Tom Miranda said that to me once.
One, it's extremely time consuming.
Yeah.
And you know, once you get your bow dialed in and you're really confident, then you just pick it up and you're just drilling tacks, right?
Yep.
And then you switch over, and then you got a new sight. Now you got all that new stuff. It's gotta be tuned, and you gotta get your confidence back to where you want it to be.
Yeah.
And bow hunting, as you guys know, confidence is everything.
Yeah.
If you don't have confidence behind the rig that you're pulling back, man, that's gonna be tough when the moment of truth happens. You're just not gonna execute.
You might only get that one chance too. That's the other problem. You know, like that buck you shot, you know, if you would have missed right there, who knows if you ever would have got that shot again.
Well, Mark said a quote that has resonated me forever, and it's not his quote. It's somebody else who quoted it, but I learned it from Mark, was one arrow could be the difference between an incredible year to a year that's beyond horrible. And, and when you look at it in bow hunting, most of us live by one arrow.
Community is what Bowhunter Planet was founded on. It's that foundation that helps us bring more men, women, and children into the outdoor community. We created Team BHP to help bring more people into the sport of archery. We'd like you to consider joining Team BHP to help us bring more people into the heritage of archery. With your contributions, you will help us bring the archery heritage to more and more people. You're not only receiving great discount code, phenomenal giveaways that we run all the time, and just the feeling of community that you can get from being a member. To get more information, check the link below.
We carry five out there for no reason, really. It's just
It's true. We all live by one arrow. And, you know, when I practice, once I get everything dialed in, I will literally shoot one arrow and go home. Why? Because one arrow is what matters, not sitting there and drilling 50 at a time. You got to grab that bow, draw it back, whatever yard you're going to practice at, and you better focus and let it happen in that one arrow. And I'll put it back now. I might do that, you know, all summer long. Just shoot the one, because you're only going to get one time. You don't get 5 reps or 10 reps or 20 reps. You get one.
So are the guys on the team, because I know you guys are, you know, very serious bow hunters, but is there anybody on the team that shoots a crossbow from Matthews?
On the Bow Madness cast, we are not allowed to shoot a crossbow on that show. It's vertical bows only.
Okay.
And that's per Matthews' request.
Okay. I was just curious. I wasn't sure. I figured you guys were just doing vertical, but I just
We do have guys on the team, the DOD team, that do crossbows, yes, but not part of the Bow Madness cast.
Got
so
it.
If
those are nice crossbows too.
Yeah. So if I was to use a crossbow, that's fine, but it's not going to go on the Bow Madness show.
Got it.
It's going to
that makes sense.
YouTube or something else. Matthews wants Bow Madness to be vertical bows only, and so
makes if, sense.
You know, we're so dedicated to that show. Do I have a crossbow? Do I have a mission? Yes. Do I use it? Yes. I use it to harvest does is what I use it for. It's more efficient. We get a lot more done a night than a vertical bow, obvious reasons. We got more range and a whole long list of things.
Awesome.
We have not harvested a buck with the mission bow. Now the guys on the team have, but not us.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah. All right, Greg. Well, thanks for joining us, man. Appreciate it. I want to have you on again soon. We got to talk some more tips and strategies and stuff like that, because it's always exciting. And I think people need to learn it too. There's a lot of people need the help.
Hey, I'm an open book anytime, guys. I'm glad you reached out, and stuff's always fun. You know, it's, It's great to share ideas because I learned from you guys as well. So I'm an open book. Just reach out anytime. We'll be happy to jump on.
Good deal. Yeah. Next time we do this, Greg, I promise we'll look at the deer cast, make sure it's a poor day. So that way we don't have to worry about hunting at all.
Oh, no worries, guys. No worries.
This has been a presentation of bowhunterplanet.com. Join the hunt.
Experience the power of 5G with T-Mobile. With faster 5G speeds nationwide, you can upload your favorite videos super fast or game on the go. Plus, T-Mobile has more 5G bars in more places, so you can stay connected to what matters most from almost anywhere. Switch to T-Mobile today, the leader in 5G.
T-Mobile has America's largest 5G network, fastest based on median overall combined 5G speeds, according to analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence data 5G speeds for Q4 2021. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
You know the old saying, selling like hotcakes? What does that even mean? What is a hotcake anyway? They should change it to selling like Hondas, because right now, Hondas are selling faster than ever. Probably because they're so rugged, long-lasting, and fuel-efficient. And if you want one, you should get to your local Honda dealer right away. Check out the 8-passenger Pilot, or maybe the Adventurous Passport. But you gotta do it fast, because Hondas are selling like, well, Hondas. New models are arriving right now. Don't wait. See your local Honda dealer today.